Anyone trying to buy a home right now can tell you it is painful out there. Prices are high, competition is fierce. WBUR's Simone Rios followed one home buyer through that odyssey on Morning Edition today, and we want to pick up the thread now. How did things get so bad? Will they improve, and what will that take? A little later in the conversation, we will take your calls. The phones are already ringing. We want to know, are you having trouble buying a home? Tell us your stories. Maybe you need advice. Ask. And if you're relocating, have your preferences changed since the start of the pandemic? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. We will pick up with you in a bit, but first, we want to welcome Mark Drayson, Executive Director of the Metropolitan Area Planning Council, to give us a bit of the big picture. Mark, welcome to the show.
Pleasure to be here, Tathiana.
So on a scale from normal to nuts, Mark, how would you describe the state of the Greater Boston housing market right now?
Well, we're pretty close to nuts. I mean, we were having a housing crisis and an emergency on the home ownership and the rental side before the pandemic. It cooled down for a while. We did see rents go down, particularly in certain parts of the region. And then it came back with a vengeance starting about 3 months ago. And honestly, I've been in this field for 40 years now. This is the hottest housing market and the most difficult housing market to get into that I've ever seen in my career.
So what do you worry about when this plays in your head? I'm assuming, maybe I'm projecting, a pit in your stomach. What are you worrying about?
Well, that pit's been in my stomach for a while, but it hurts a little more right now. The thing I worry about most is the economic future of the region. You know, we're kind of lucky. People want to live here. People want to move here from other parts of the country and other parts of the world. That's a good thing. Like many of your listeners, I lived through a period of disinvestment here in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s. And disinvestment is a lot worse. It's a lot worse when people don't want to move into your area, and home prices are falling, and you see vacant and boarded up apartments. Right now, we're dealing with a good problem, which is that people want to live here and people want to move here. You just have to have enough homes for them to buy or rent. And we have been limiting supply now for decades. We don't build enough houses. We don't build enough rental, enough condos, enough single family homes. And the result is that we're pricing ourselves out of that market. I know from my own experience that members of my staff have left to move to other states where it's easier to buy a home. And we see that happening in the private sector and even in the public sector all over this region. That's the thing I worry about the most.
Mark, you said just a second ago that we have been limiting our supply for decades. Simone Rios, our colleague, reported this morning that single-family home supply is down 50% over last summer. Condos down 38%. That's in a year. Building takes longer than that. Why else are we seeing this sort of strangling of the supply? Or is it not unusual to see a 50% reduction in supply year over year?
Well, the level of change is the level of limitation and the level of change in supply is a little bit unusual, but we've been seeing this pattern for decades here in Greater Boston. Most land use decisions belong with local cities and towns. And unfortunately, many of those communities, not all, but many of those communities intentionally try and limit supply. They don't want too many people moving in. They don't want more kids in the schools. There are also, and we really have to recognize this. We have to own up to it. There are racial and social and class reasons for this as well. And so you have many communities in the region not allowing multifamily housing anywhere in their community. Other communities technically allow it, but then they say things like the city council or town meeting needs to approve every single new development, which is kind of equivalent to saying there will be no more development. And if you don't build enough rental housing, it has a pernicious effect on home ownership as well. Because then senior citizens who might want to downsize to a condo or rental apartment, they can't find one in the community where they've lived, the community they love. So they stay put in their single family home for an extra 5, 10, 15 years. And that home with plenty of bedrooms isn't available to a young family.
Go ahead, finish your thought.
Yeah, the rental market and the home ownership market are really connected. If you want to moderate prices, not even bring them down tremendously, but just moderate them, you have to build more single-family homes, especially smaller ones. You have to build more condos, and you must build more rental housing, and not in just one part of the region, but throughout the region.
So back in January, the Commonwealth passed a $626 million omnibus bill. It included Governor Baker's housing choice, which changes zoning law so that municipalities can pass zoning changes with a simple voting majority rather than a two-thirds majority. Now, some people's eyes will glaze over on zoning, but that has the potential, as I understand it, to make a big difference in loosening up housing restrictions in cities and towns. That's what, 8 months ago now? Have we seen any benefit from that? Do you anticipate seeing any benefit from that?
Well, it will take some time, but we've already begun to see benefit from it. I have seen communities that have passed new zoning ordinances allowing for more housing production or allowing for what we call accessory dwelling units, allowing for multifamily housing since that law passed. It was definitely a good idea to bring us into sync with most of the rest of the country to say that these zoning ordinances could be approved by a simple majority rather than by two-thirds. That bill also included an important requirement that communities in the MBTA district must have at least one district of reasonable size for multifamily housing development. It will take longer to implement that part, but the state is developing regulations, and my hope is that we will see additional supply come out from, you know, as a result of that. Housing choice was a very good step in the right direction. Congratulations to Governor Baker for putting it forward and the legislature for passing it. But it is only a first step. There are a lot more things we need to do to create more units, to create more supply, and especially to create affordable units. You know, it has taken us 20, 30 years of limited development to get into this pickle. We can't only get out of it by increasing supply. We have to produce units that are truly affordable. That requires more subsidy. And we even need to have what I like to call an adult conversation about limitations on rents in certain circumstances.
All right. Well, we have talked about limitations on rents, also known as rent control, previously on Radio Boston. My guess is we're going to have that conversation again, especially because it's an issue in the Boston's mayor's race. That was Mark Drayson of the Metropolitan Area Planning Council. Mark, thanks for coming on the show. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Okay, again, that number, listeners, 1-800-423-8255 to join this conversation. The calls are coming in. You can also tweet us at Radio Boston. I just want to bring in the guests who are going to help us with these calls next. We have Realtor and Chief Sustainability Officer of Layer Realty Partners, Craig Foley, and Greg Vassell, CEO and President of the Greater Boston Real Estate Board. Craig, welcome.
Thank you.
Greg, welcome.
Good afternoon.
And let's just acknowledge I may mess that up once, but I'm going to try not to. Craig and Greg, it's good to have both of you.
Great to be here.
Okay, so I'm actually going to grab a couple of calls right off the board, Craig and Greg, and then we're going to jump into our conversation. You good with that?
Sounds good.
All right, Barbara's on the line in Georgetown, Massachusetts. Barbara, go ahead.
Hi. So I've been looking for a single-family home for a year and a half now. I sold my other home and I've been living in an apartment right before COVID hit, this all started. And I have not been able to find, and I'm talking about a three-bedroom home, one and a half bath, something small, nothing major, that's, you know, reasonable quality. And I feel like the houses, I've moved many times in my life, I feel like the housing quality is not there for the dollar amount to be asking, like $625 for a ranch from the 1950s that had very little done to it, rather just a Home Depot kitchen and bathroom, maybe one of those plastic cover-up things Yep. over the bathroom. Nothing major done, and they're asking exorbitant amount of money for it. They don't want you to do any kind of inspection, no contingencies, all kinds. And I can come in with cash and have no contingencies, and yet I still cannot find any value.
Okay. So I'm going to stop you there, Barbara. I really appreciate your call. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you just hit like 8 points that I think are key in this conversation, and I want to give our guests a chance to weigh in. Craig, how typical is what we're hearing from Barbara?
Well, that's a pretty typical story. There's no question. I feel Barbara's pain. There's no question about it. That is exactly the price point that it is the toughest spot in the marketplace right now. I mean, unfortunately, or fortunately for home sellers, very tough market for home buyers. But you know, that is a price point where people are just driven to, and that is the price point where we're seeing multiple offers all the time. Now, Barbara's in a great situation in that she's a cash buyer, so that there's certainly an advantage there, and there are a lot of cash buyers out there right now that you know make the traditional home buyer, even with 20% down, but if you're putting down 5 or 10% at that price point, it's very difficult to land a property. I would say for Barbara, something to consider, and I understand her point, absolutely, that, you know, she's worried about the value, buying in this marketplace. But the market is a place, as Mark said in the previous segment, we're lucky to be in an area of the country where people want to be. So buying the, you know, quote unquote, not so good house and making improvements to it over time so that you can increase your equity is something that we guide people to look at this point.
Greg, I'm going to pick it up from you there. I want to turn to Greg for a second. I hear Craig, and I just want everyone to know the lines are just blowing up. So we'll go back to calls in a minute. But Greg, oh my gosh, cash in this market,
yes,
waiving contingencies. I mean, at one level, you want to say, who can even do that? And what will it mean for our economy long term when these are the burdens of home ownership, home purchasing in our communities?
Well, it's a stark reality. And I sort of harken back to what Mark Drazen just said. It's the result of many decades of non-production of the kind of housing stock that we needed. You know, we need developers to be building more of the kind of housing stock that was built after World War II for the returning GIs. Three-bedroom, one-and-a-half-bath homes that people can afford to get into. Smaller house-size lots. That's the sort of stuff that people need to start. And Barbara was looking at a 1950s ranch with not too much work on it. You know, some of those capes from the 1940s and 50s fall right into that sweet spot.
All right, let's go back to the phones here. Thanks for that, Greg. 1-800-423-8255 to join the conversation. We've got Bruce on the line in Roxbury. Bruce, go ahead.
Hi. It's good to be on. My name is Bruce Marks. I'm the CEO of NACA. So, you know, we've been doing this for 35 years in terms of providing mortgages to low and moderate income people. So anybody that comes through NACA gets a no down payment, no closing costs loan, and today's rate is 2%. For a 30-year fixed, 1.25% for a 15-year. But the point I want to make, and I agree with what's being said, in that we got to build affordable housing. But the also good thing that, you know, what Mark was talking about and what your guests are, is that, you know, there's a lot of developers out there that are building the high-end properties. We should, and they require variances. They require them in Boston. They require them where they want to build. And we should require them to have 50% of the units that they are developing be affordable housing.
Okay, Bruce, I'm going to take it from you there. Thank you, Bruce. And again, we have so many people who want to have a conversation here. The mortgage thing that Bruce is bringing up, I do wonder about that. And Craig, I've been thinking about the Great Recession and what we learned about mortgage products that were sort of feeding a frenzy. And we see this buying frenzy now. Not everybody can go cash only. Do people have access to the mortgages they need? And what does that do to housing equity, especially given our history of redlining in this country?
Those are great questions. Those are great questions. And Bruce had some great comments too. That I'd like to just give a gentle pushback to. So I work with developers, and, you know, let's not forget that the same issues that Barbara has in terms of buying housing or buying lots or buying land to be able to develop, developers are dealing with that also. Very, very expensive prices. And on top of that, they have the risk going through COVID, where they couldn't get permits signed off on, where their carrying costs were extended. The risk, I know developers aren't the most favorited people on the face of the earth, but there's a lot of risk in developing property. And I have to say, if we went to 50% affordable without any kind of density bonuses, and perhaps that's what Housing Choice will be able to provide, it would be impossible. You wouldn't have development happen at this region. I know that many people think development, you know, the developers just make all kinds of money, hands over fists. I can honestly say that that is not the case, that there is a ton of risk involved.
So, Greg, let me bring Greg in here. Greg, do you agree with Craig? I mean, I can imagine the listener out there that's saying, I want to push back on that, because there always is. Do you agree with Craig, what Craig is saying there, Greg, and any way to shade that we should know?
Well, I totally agree with what Craig said, because the difficulty with development is it's easier to build for the higher end of the market, because when you look at land costs, soft costs, hard costs, the cost of, you know, materials and permitting and everything else, you end up with a really high number. And then when you look at what you got for a number and what you have to sell it for, it's automatically at the higher end. I mean, and then the inclusionary zoning stuff is great and trying to build a high percentage of affordable, but some part of your development has to bear those burdens. And if you put it at such a high number, it just doesn't cash flow and the deal's not going to happen.
So much of this, Greg, is focused on building. What about existing housing stock? Is there something that we can or should be doing differently with existing housing stock to encourage more of it onto the market?
Well, what you might think of is some of the bigger, older homes, maybe there was a way to convert them into two families. Maybe the square footage in them is so large that you could actually, you know, we built a lot of multifamily housing. You know, when you look at the Worcesters and the Lowells and the Lawrences, the twos and the threes, those were really good family homes. And if you were in one of those units, there was a lot of room to live in and raise a family. You know, maybe we should think about building more product like that. Yeah, the backyards are smaller and yeah, the streets are tighter, but you could put a lot of families together. And it was built for a time really when people could walk to work from the neighborhoods that they lived in. And we're looking to lower our carbon footprint. Maybe we need to rethink that. And since we can work from home, maybe that's the way we go.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We've got Karen on the line in Easton. Karen, go ahead.
Hi. I just sold my house for twice as much as I bought it for 20 years ago. But going out and trying to find another house has been absolutely impossible, even though I have twice as much money to deal. Well, I sold it for $159 20 years ago, and I just sold my house for $330 cash. They put it off for a month and a half. I'm going crazy, but I was very happy with that amount. But going out, all I can afford is a house with like 400 to 800 square feet, the houses I've been seeing. If I want to have money left over to go visit my grandbabies who are in Florida and Manhattan, I cannot do it. Also, I have a comment about HOA fees.
Karen, I'm going to skip the HOA fees. Thank you. But the first point that you had is central to this conversation. So let's pick up on that. You know, this supply and demand crunch that we are in, Craig, and preparing for this today, I read quite a bit about the fact that if someone does put a house on the market, they may not have another house they can afford to go to. Is that suppressing the kind of churn that might loosen up the market a little bit?
Absolutely. The average time for home sellers to sell used to be in the 7 to 10 year range, and that's, you know, now 12 to 15 years. That's a problem in the marketplace. And of course, in Greater Boston, you know, we have an ocean to the east, so we can't build there. So development has moved further north, west, south, and it's increased prices everywhere. So you have to go further and further outside the 128, 495 corridors to be able to get something that's affordable. I think the solution here, it's already been said a bunch of times, starting with Mark and what Greg's already said, is we really have to creatively think, you know, new zoning options out there for communities to allow development to happen. I think that's the only solution. I think MAPC, I remember in 2014, produced a study that said we need 400,000 housing units in Greater Boston by 2040 just to sustain the growth that we have in our economy. We need creative solutions at this point.
And MAPC being the Massachusetts Area Planning Council, which
correct.
Mark Driesen is with. So, Greg, yeah. I want to come back to you here. When we're in a fixed pie situation, right, that means by definition there are going to be winners and losers. Are we in a fixed pie situation here? And if we are, which communities are winning in this market and which communities in Massachusetts are losing?
Well, I think it depends how you define winning. You know, because there'll be communities, I think, in the long term, as Craig mentioned, that will win if they think of creative ways to bring people into their communities, because they'll bring in not only diversity, but new sort of intellectual power, new opportunities for retail and restaurants and different things. You know, as we bring more people in, we need to have communities be creative and thinking of new ways to create places for people to live and work. The communities that are sort of stodgy, don't want to change, want to keep the 1-acre zoning and just keep things the way they are, you know, that's not going to fly in the new world that we're in. And I don't think that's where people are going to want to live. You know, I think gone are the days of the long driveways and the big commutes. I just think we need to be sort of have a different approach.
So we have a caller who I'm not going to have time to get to, who raises a question that we've heard a lot of conversation about, which is where you have luxury housing, buyers purchasing that housing because it's an investment for their money, not necessarily living in it, and driving up overall housing prices. That's a conversation we've been having in Boston for at least 5-10 years now. Craig, is that a concern, or Greg, whoever feels like they want to take this one on? And short-term rentals, the way they are changing who buys and sells and why we hold properties. Are there other structural issues here we haven't been talking about that maybe need to be brought into the picture? Craig, maybe you first.
Well, Greg has, I'm sure, some answers for this. I'd prefer he pick.
Let's
this
do it, Greg.
First.
Go ahead.
Well, I think that people should realize that real estate is a wonderful investment, and that people feel that there's more safety there than maybe in other investments like the stock market, and certainly returns on their money for banks. So, I mean, I think it's difficult as a free market economy to try to regulate who can buy and who cannot buy particular homes. I mean, we just talked a little bit a while ago about redlining. So do we go out and say, just because somebody happens to have disposable cash and wanted to buy an investment property or to buy, you know, a unit? I mean, we see this in the city all the time. Somebody has a kid that's going to school here in Boston. They buy a unit. That person is a student, lives there for 4 or 5 years, and then they keep it as a rental property. I mean, I think that's a good thing because it helps, you know, mean that the community is a desirable place to live.
So I'm going to come back to you now, Craig. We're starting to run short on time, and I'm just mindful, you know, in all these calls, we heard the sense of urgency. We heard the sense of frustration from our callers. How are you, I don't mean this pejoratively, but how are you holding buyers' hands right now? And what kind of guidance are you giving them? This is a rough, rough time to be trying to put your family in a home that you own.
Well, the tricky part with buyers is, you know, we end up being marriage counselors as well, Tiziana, in this process, as you can imagine. And it's very tough for them to make decisions. And our job as realtors, they're our clients. We have to do what they want to do. So we give them as much information as they want to make, and they make the decisions about their offer price. And typically, you know, that's a process that goes through several multiple offers where they learn the market. I've learned as a realtor in the business for 21 years, you know, hopefully, you know, all my clients, and they do, ask me what they think the chances are of landing the deal, and I will give that to them with the offer that they're giving. But I'm not going to force anyone to make any decisions that they don't want. They have to learn the market on their own. So working with a buyer is hard. It's a lot of work, and it takes time, and it's multiple offers. It's seeing a bunch of different properties, and you feel their pain through the entire process. A good realtor, and there's so many of them out here in this marketplace, you know, is really respectful of that, I think.
All right. That is Craig Foley. He is a realtor and chief sustainability officer of Layer Realty. We've also had Greg Vassell, CEO and president of the Greater Boston Real Estate Board. Greg, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
Yeah.